I have it.
That boy like Madea. Let go, Madea.
Tonga by Lord. Blocked by Armstead. Two into the end zone. Caught for the touchdown! Caught for the touchdown! Waddle! Miami has taken the lead!
Dak, what the f***?
It's your two favorite degenerates back with another Day One Dolphins podcast. Once again, hosted by your boy, Ouch. Follow me on Twitter at YFinsYY. Here with me today is my fellow lifelong Miami Dolphins fan, Chief Sutt. Please throw him a follow on Twitter at Chief Sutt. Follow our podcast Twitter at Day Number One Dolphins to stay up to date. Let's get down to it. What's going on, Sutt?
Not too much, dog. I'm getting a little pissed off with all these people talking about Brock the Cock for MVP as if Tua's not doing everything that he's doing, but we have a pretty big opportunity on Monday to shut a lot of that down.
Yeah, I mean, it's feeling like lose-lose too at the same time. You know, it's just like the biggest criticism for the Dolphins is that they can't beat actual contenders, even though, I mean, we don't have to go into detail, but even though it's been two Super Bowl teams on the road or whatever, but it's neither here nor there.
And one non-contender.
Yeah, one non-contender being the Buffalo Bills, because they are a non-contender at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think going into this weekend, they have a 14% chance of making the playoffs per... I don't know what it is, NBC or something, like tracks like the odds.
Right. And they have a pretty good layout with all these injuries to the Chiefs. So it's kind of lining up for them to be able to squeeze it out. But Chiefs still got Patrick, still got Andy Reid. So good luck to Buffalo. But I don't know. I just think if you want to line it up pound for pound, what each player's done all season, it's almost disrespectful that Tua is not the favorite, or at least Tyreek is the favorite. And if you're not going to give it to Tua and you're going to give it to Tyreek, who's going to hit 2K, completely understand. But Brock Purdy? Really? That's what we're doing?
I don't know. There's a lot of people that made a lot of good points about it. Like, if we're going to talk about like the MVP race.
Yeah, why not?
And they, you know, Jerry Rice didn't win it. You know, Randy Moss didn't win it. You know,
they didn't put up 2K.
I mean, there's been years where they led the league in yards. You know what I mean? There's been leagues where years where they were the most dominant player in NFL and everyone knew it was. But because of the way that people perceive the quarterback position to be the most difficult in all of sports to play, it's a quarterback award. You know what I'm saying? So, and I'm going to pick a quarterback, knowing that they're going to give it to a quarterback no matter what, right? If I'm going to pick one, it's going to be right now. I mean, I would include Brock Purdy in it for sure, but it's not like as clear cut as everyone thinks it is. I don't think he's running away with it. I think it looks a lot like Dak Prescott, Tua, and Brock to me, if you're being fair, based on what past years, you know, have earned you the MVP award. That's what it looks like.
So no Stroud?
Stroud too, but he's still going to, I mean, it's still not the end of the season, but yeah, definitely CJ. I forget. I'm reading off the names that they have listed. CJ Stroud is not listed and he should be.
And he's got more passing yards than Brock. He's got one less interception, but Brock's got three more touchdowns. So I guess the three touchdowns is really what's swinging it and, you know, the win loss record. But
yeah, Brock's on a better team. So that's always going to matter, you know, because you get to see them more and more primetime games. You get to see them later in the season. So, you know, even though that shouldn't be taken into account, it is. Same reason that Jalen Hurts' name is being thrown into the hat. You know what I mean? It's because he's on a good team. So I don't think he should get it, in my opinion, but.
I'm pretty sure CJ's the only quarterback that I've ever seen that's from Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh, man. That's pretty close to me, actually. That's where the show Workaholics is based out of.
Yes, sir. Like, he literally went to high school out there. I'm like, bro, give him the award.
It's
and
Cali.
Have Adam DeMamp give him the trophy.
I will say, like we all know that most of the NFL athletes come from Florida. The climate breeds it, you know, Texas, Florida, Georgia, But California definitely breeds some quarterbacks out here for sure. And they have, you know, like the LA system, the surrounding cities like Ventura, you know, Fresno, like Orange County, they have football programs out, you know, on this side. And there's a lot of players come from out here for sure. It's a competitive high school football conference.
Bryce is from out there as well, isn't he?
I'm not really familiar with Bryce, but he looks like he should be from out here, huh?
I believe he went to Mater Dei, or one of the bigger high schools out there. Let me check.
Said he was born in Philly.
Yeah.
He was born in Philly, but yeah, he's from Pasadena. Yeah,
he went to Mater Dei. Yeah.
Yeah, Pasadena is a rock throw from where I'm at right now.
Yeah, you can see some really good football out there, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Mater Dei came over here and put the stomp down on St. Thomas, and St. Thomas is about to win state again tomorrow.
Wow. I mean, Pasadena is where they hold the Rose Bowl, you know?
Yeah.
But
Young Bryce looks like our little Tua, man. And speaking of our little Tua,
I think that people who think Bryce Young is bad, I just don't get it. Like, we've moved far beyond the days where you gave a quarterback a chance. Like Peyton Manning, when he came out as a rookie, he would have been benched in the current day. You know what I mean? Like, there's just no time, because of how it's possible to find a CJ Stroud, to find a rookie quarterback that can come in and command the offense immediately, even though it's still rare, but because it exists more often, that's the new standard teams are looking for. They're not looking to give Patrick Mahomes a year under someone's belt. They're not looking to have Tua sit behind Ryan Fitzpatrick. They're not looking for that. They're looking for somebody that can come in and play. And because of that, you know, we're going to see
people. They want results now.
Yep.
They don't want to wait. And like, yeah, Peyton Manning had what, 22 or 23 interceptions his rookie year, something crazy like that.
Mm-hmm. He had a Jameis Winston year. I mean, it was just nothing but touchdowns and interceptions. You know, it was a highlight reel all the time, but you knew they weren't going to win a bunch of games. And I mean, one of the greatest ever. Obviously that's an extreme comparison, but these kids aren't allocated as many snaps, as many reps, as many mistakes in a game as they once were.
Yeah, it's a much shorter leash, and you're kind of seeing it with the coaches as well. They're not getting as long of an opportunity to prove themselves. It's a faster-paced world. It's more of a instant gratification world overall, so you're not really going to get time for that. And you're seeing in college football and even high school football, the kids are starting to match that energy to where if they're not getting exactly what they want when they want, they just transfer out too.
Yeah.
So it literally goes both ways, but it's sad to see all over the place because it's just whack.
Well,
whack.
Football used to be one of the sports, in my opinion, that still had a little bit of loyalty to it. If you look at the way that the NBA is, especially post LeBron James Miami, I mean, everybody bounces around every other year to a team, and they create new super teams literally every offseason. Hockey, very similar. Hockey, because there's only so many people on the ice at a time, you know, and how impactful one player is when it's a team of that size. You know, like one player makes an impact in football, but, you know, I mean, you got 53 guys on the roster, whereas, you know, you got what, 5 guys on the basketball court, 6 guys on the ice in hockey. So it's you're more impactful, one player. And it's every offseason it changes. It didn't used to be like that for football, man. You used to see people play like, you know, one or two teams, you know, especially good players. But now, it's the same thing, and it's going to become more and more like that. I think
it's just going to keep getting worse and worse.
Yeah. I think that more players are going to probably have these like no trade clauses, and who they get to, you know, before it was only the superstars that were able to negotiate those type of contracts. Now, I mean, it is a little bit oversaturated, not oversaturated, but more saturated with extreme talent than it was before, right? You know, there's a lot of dynamic players coming out of college. Like, you used to have to really hit on an all-star receiver. Now, I mean, there's more all-star receivers than ever, right?
Yeah, you get at least 3 a draft minimum.
I mean, they're just straight athletes. The how athletic kids are nowadays seems like it's a lot more common than it was once before.
Well, They had a couple of athletes playing in Washington the other night.
Yeah,
well, I guess it was the other day. It felt like it was at night with how foggy it was. That was kind of funky.
Let's start with the Washington offense. What takeaways do you have from the Miami Dolphins game, looking at the Washington offense and how they tried to operate versus us? Good, bad.
To quote a wise man, they're who we thought they were. That's why we took the damn field. They did not do anything that we didn't know they were going to do. They handed it off to Brian Robinson a bunch. They tried to hit some deep balls till their explosives, as our coaching staff calls them. Those just weren't there. They were honestly getting a little bit further along with the power run game and their, you know, sketchy little rollout game. But, I mean, I'll take it. We had, what, like 3 sacks?
Yeah, but I mean, if you had to, like, you know, give me something good you saw in Washington's offense, something bad you saw in Washington's offense, what would you say?
I thought a good overall. Good I saw from them, I like Sam Howell. Pretty impressive escaping the rush on quite a few plays. Pretty good about just using his legs and sliding a little bit. You know, he got a rushing touchdown on us. That was kind of an impressive play. Mm-hmm. So I'd say that was good. Bad, I would say their receiving core really let him down. I know we have a lockdown secondary, but you guys got to do something. Outside of Curtis Samuel, Jahan Dotson didn't really exist. Scary Terry did not exist. And if you're going to compete with us specifically, you need to be able to put points up on the board. And guys like that just got to make plays here and there. If Garrett Wilson can make a play here and there and score a touchdown against us, there's really no reason Scary Terry can't. And honestly, Jahan Dotson's not too far behind either of them either. So, I mean,
I don't think Terry McLaurin had a single reception.
He didn't. Zeroed across the board. He barely had any targets.
That's just shameful as a coach, as a quarterback. Like that, if you were to go after the game and see that stat line, you'd probably be able to tell if you won or not. You'd be able to guess based on that.
And that's not winning football for a team that relies on those big play guys to hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They need it.
For me, same thing. Sam Howell, I kind of knew what the deal was. Told you going into it. And he reminds me of like a love child from like Ryan Fitzpatrick and Baker Mayfield. He looks like he's so used to being under duress. You know, it's not that he like is calm and collective. It's just like he knows already. He's expecting it, you know. Kind of like how you would want somebody like Daniel Jones to play in New York. Like he knows the pressure's coming. He knows he has to manipulate the pocket. He knows he needs to maneuver the pocket. He knows he's going to be on the run. He knows there's going to be blitzes, and he's going to have to get the hot read immediately. For how, you know, talent-deprived that team is, I think he's doing all right, man. And I'm seeing rumors that he's going to be, like, you know, the long-term starter, and that's good for him. Like, he's definitely, like,
why not?
Been playing on a sinking ship, so why not, you know?
Yeah, he's competing. He's putting his head down and trying to run people over. He's not giving up on plays. Mm-hmm. Why not? Build an O-line around him. Give him a run for a little bit while he's on this rookie contract. And if he can prove something, cool. You got a deal.
Yeah.
But
one thing I did notice about their offense that I, you know, was kind of what we talked about going into this game as far as losing Jalen Phillips and how important that was, not just for the pass rush, because we have pass rushers. We don't have anybody as physically gifted and as explosive as Jalen Phillips, but we have people that get home and rush the pass. You know, Emmanuel Ogbah did it for plenty fine in the Flores scheme, and he has had limited snaps and delivered, as far as I'm concerned, when he's on the field in this scheme. Bradley Chubb, talk about him every week. Talk about the slander that he went through. Delivers. Andrew Van Ginkle just fills in as a pass rusher. Delivers every single time. Something special happens when he's on the field, and we will get to that. This game especially. But none of those three guys set the edge as well as Jalen Phillips does. And these outside zone runs, which this is the first team that we face that has a week's worth of practice knowing that Jalen Phillips is no longer a member of this season's Miami Dolphins. And I saw a bunch of them. And those were some of the most successful runs of their day. You know, the ones that, you know, that one big run that Brian Robinson had, it wasn't huge, but like a 17-yard run or maybe 20-yard run on second and 16. And it was just outside, right to Emmanuel Ogba's side. They cannot set the edge. It's going to be a weakness moving forward. And I thought they did a good job at abusing that.
I mean, you called it up front. And not only did they abuse it, but it was almost the most efficient part of their offense on the day.
Yeah, it was like the only life that they had. And every time that they got to do that, they were then able to kind of incorporate a solid little pass. Like you said, I definitely thought the downside to their offense was his receivers letting him down. I think they gave Jahan Dotson a catch that shouldn't have been a catch, but it was early, whatever. Brian Robinson got
Terry
hurt.
Terry and Jahan combined for 8 targets, 2 catches, 23 yards.
Yeah, and
that's just not going to cut it.
Yeah, no. I mean, he was under duress, and I thought he did a good job a couple times. Like, there was a ball that hit Logan Wilson in the hands while he was getting speared, and, you know, he drops it. But every time he used his legs, and he was escaping the pocket, rolling out across his body, having to run on his own, go through his progressions, I thought he did really well, man. And you know, I'm glad that we beat them.
He's got some wheels.
I'm glad that we beat them so that we can move on, and they're an NFC team with no wins and not expected to make the playoffs, so I can kind of underdog root for them, you know?
As a team, I like them. I like them going into the season. I mean, I listed them as our trap game, but I just really like the confirmation that this is not last year's Dolphins. We kind of spent the entire offseason just mentally a little shocked and kind of broken that they dropped every single game in December after having such a great start. And to take the very first game in December, stomp somebody out. All right, cool. This ain't last year. Let's go ahead and keep it rocking. Oh. That was the biggest takeaway that I had overall on the game.
I like the narrative because it's optimistic. You know, Kyle Krabs is saying something around this, what you just said. And I don't mean to be like the Debbie Downer or whatever. Might be channeling my Mr. Ware here, but like the caliber of opponents this December versus the caliber of opponents that we played last December isn't super comparable thus far for me. You know, I mean, I'm glad that the date that this fell on was a game that was won in December, but this wasn't the game in the, you know, this wasn't the Chargers last year. This wasn't the Niners last year. You know, it wasn't the Bills. You know, we still got some hard games in the future, but, you know, it is what it is. I want to see.
Thanks, Debbie.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we won a game in December, but let's not act like the Commanders and the Titans are the kind of games that, you know, maybe the Titans 2 years ago, but like, I want to win versus a physical team that's above 500 in December. You know what I mean? Like like a mini playoff game, like a playoff, you know, like how the Niners felt probably going into Philly and beating the brakes off of them right before the playoffs start. You know what I mean? Like something like that. That's what you're looking for.
And I do agree. I completely agree. But again, beat the team in front of you, dude.
No, yeah.
And whoever it is, beat them. And that it's not like the Commanders are a terrible 4-win team. I think they're what you would consider a good 4-win team. They're gonna fight. They tried their hardest. They didn't
fold lay down
early. Yeah, they kept trying to bring it all the way through the end, even with the backups in. So I respect their gangster. Like I think you say it every single week. People play us like it's their Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it probably meant a lot to them to come out strong. And they started to kind of try to come out strong on their first offensive drive, but
it's
if you don't score
hard
on that first one, yeah, man.
Like, I mean, they gave you. People were really critical of their defense. If I were to move on to their defense now, if we're talking about Washington, because that first play, not the first play of the game, but the third play of the game, I think for us on our offensive drive, you see the safety kind of lean towards Devon Achane's side. And leave Tyreek Hill kind of 1v1, and then Tua, like usual. I'm waiting to see when people are going to fake that so that they bait Tua into calling an audible for Tyreek and then go cover him. But that was like the first, I mean,
They have, people have to start doing that because there's no way you're going to keep running this nonsense on us.
Well,
he catches them every time.
This is Ron Rivera's first game calling the defense since he fired the defensive coordinator, and obviously he struggled as well. But you put that safety in a position where he was going to lose no matter what. Now, if I'm the coach, for what it's worth, if you're going to lose no matter what, I want you to cover Tyreek Hill and make the other guy beat you. And then we can talk about it in the film room after.
Yep.
Which is what he should have done. But if you look at the film and it was like, why would he not be over there by Tyreek Hill? He probably lost that either way. That was a disaster either way. That was a walk-in touchdown either way, it looked like. So, you know, it ain't like he don't deserve to be torn apart, whoever that poor guy was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about our offense? Talk about the Miami offense, and we'll talk about our offense and defense, but as far as our offense, takeaways, players, game balls?
I mean, my game ball's going to QB1. I don't think he gets enough of them. I think everybody always wants to give them to the running backs, which they deserve it. Everybody always wants to give Tyreek one, and he always deserves it. You could give it to him again this game, but we just aren't us without him. And I think this was one of the games where you just got to see his whole bag of tricks. You got to see him use about 2 to 3 different moves to sidestep free rushers. You saw him use a couple different moves to sidestep and get away from straight up pass rushers that got away from that. Maybe our offensive linemen, you know, let them get away a little bit too soon and he had to make something happen. You saw all the little intricacies in his game on top of the accuracy, on top of the anticipation, on top of that throw that everybody was roasting on social media. I rewatched that like 6 times and I'm like, bro, he let it go when Tyreek was almost at the 45 and it hit Tyreek in that spot on the 20. He released it like a full 2.5, almost 3 seconds before he like even looked up for it. It's like he leaves me speechless and it's sick in the games, but watching the replays, it makes you have an even higher appreciation for him. He's just excellent. But negatives? Yeah. I don't... Stop running those stupid reverses with Cheetah. I'm sick of it. Like, I know they free up the offense here and there. One of them hit, but that second one was egregious. And you had Tua halfway out there pretending to throw a block. I don't like nothing about that. Cut it out. I like the little jet sweeps with A-Train. And, you know, whatever. But, yeah. And rant.
Well, I mean, it's a rant that is deserved to be heard, but I want to go on. I wish I was trying to look up the exact quote or tweet or, you know, unnecessary criticism that Tua gets. They just look for a reason. It is what it is. Like, I just opened it, the stupid bird app or X app right now, looking.
Twitter. It is called Twitter.
Yeah. I'm looking for the tweet that you were talking about that we interacted with. And I immediately just see one that's something different right here, talking about Tua being benched for Fitz 87 times. You know what I mean? It's just, it's more about the narrative than it is actually what happens. And it's almost like they watch him play and they're just waiting for the justification. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, finally here. See, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I've been waiting to show you what I'm talking about. But he said, I cannot stress how poor of a throw that was. Pretty sure that's how he said it.
Yeah, and it's not just enough how bad of a throw this is. Mm-hmm. Or whatever.
How bad of a throw that like perfectly hit him in the hands. And then thank God, just for the sake of like, you know.
Yeah, this is one of the coolest plays I've seen live. I cannot stress how bad this throw was and how amazing this play by Hill is. He's got Fuller beat so badly, he just flips his hips and goes and gets. Bro, he literally got community noted that Tua threw the ball correctly.
Yeah, the little like the route. Twitter Elon Musk like fake news thing. Yeah, he got community noted because, and this is what I'm talking about. People that have like two things. Clue. Either you have no clue, which is most of these people, or B, you give the disclaimer ahead of time that there is no way for you to have any idea for sure that this is what is happening because it's different in every single offensive room. You know what I mean? Like, yep. The rules of what you're supposed to do vary depending on the scheme. Now, if you weren't a complete moron, you would have looked at what side the hash the safety was on. And then you would have been able to try and deduce, you know, what he might have been thinking. If you weren't a moron, you'd be able to pause the film at the moment where the ball is being released with his arm at a 90-degree angle. And then you'd be able to see where he stood. I mean,
you can see it clear as day when you stop it right there when he releases it. If he floats it too far inside, the safety's jumping that.
Yeah.
He put it in the best place possible to the point that it hit Tyreek in stride.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tyreek's so good, and he's not wrong about what an amazing play it was by Tyreek, but Tyreek's the one that set himself up for it to have to be that difficult. Either way, doesn't matter.
And also, Tyreek came out, obviously, for anybody that missed it, and dove on this Grant Paulson clown. Bad take. I ran my route wrong. Tua threw that ball exactly where I was supposed to be. He noticed my angle, put enough air time on it just to give me time to adjust. And again, Tua processed all of that and let it rip in about 2 seconds.
Yeah, and I mean,
it's just not real. You guys don't understand ball. And if you did understand ball, you would understand that you're watching an artist every single week in the pocket. He is masterful in some of the stuff that he can do. And yeah, I know he's not the sexiest 6'5 blonde white quarterback and everything that these people, I guess, want to see. But when it comes to just being an absolute assassin, he does it. And he needs a big Monday night game to kind of get some of this stuff spinning in his direction. But
yeah,
he did what he was supposed to, and he chopped up a pretty good defense. He didn't take any sacks against a pretty solid D-line.
I thought his pocket presence was reminiscent of like his Alabama years, you know, type of stuff that you looked at and you wrote down on your scouting report of why you wanted the Dolphins to draft Tua. You know, this was a really good game of him maneuvering the pocket, him stepping around, him shaking defenders just long enough to get the throw off. You know, this is what you want to see in the bigger games because you know he's capable of it. Stuff that he's criticized for not being able to do that most of us know that he can do pretty well. I thought this was one of his best games as far as that was concerned. As far as the Miami defense, like you said, Terry McLaurin was held to zero catches. You know, for the majority of the game, the run was kept in check. There were a couple times where, you know, a linebacker was matched up on a receiver outside or something and they got abused, which, you know, we could talk about. Sealer had a big day with the pressure, there was a couple other sacks. You know, Christian Wilkins was back there. One of the big names that we'll talk about here is going to be Andrew Van Ginkle. Thought it was awesome that he got spotlighted on Hard Knocks after the game, you know, being that he had such an amazing game.
Sam Van Ginkle had me in here crying.
Yeah.
I'm like, my Lord, this woman is so sweet, and they are such a sweet little wholesome clan of Van Ginkles running around.
And his son's names, dude, Rip Van Ginkle and Ripe Van Ginkle. Come on, bro.
Come on, dog.
That's
certified
fire.
Goon, dog. Put him in a ring of honor.
Yeah, like, and then yeah, his wife when she's out there, she's like trying to talk to her friend who probably doesn't know anywhere near as much about football as she does, and
no
she's
clue.
Like, I love when they play him on the edge. You know, he always produces off the edge, and I'm like, preach, babe.
I was like,
knows
crown
ball.
Her.
He got himself.
Crown her.
Yeah, she knows what she's talking about.
Yes, that's a wife
yeah.
right there. I don't know a lot of these NFL dudes, they love their thoughts. But man, I love me some Sam Van Ginkle, dude.
Yeah,
that's what it's
ball.
All about. He always makes plays on the edge.
What was
yes,
his stat
does.
Line? I think he had, a pass breakups,
they robbed
pressures.
Him of the sack. I will say that.
They gave the sack to somebody
five
else.
Tackles,
but he was the one.
Solo, two pass deflections, one interception, one touchdown, two pressures.
And the interception.
Tackle for loss with David Long. Yeah, the pick six.
What a beautiful thing, right? They told Vic Fangio, or he said that Vic had pointed out something on film. You ran it back, paused it. We looked at it. Do you want to break down what you saw happen there?
I mean, bro, he literally lined up, and anybody that wants to just replay that clip, you can see it. The moment he realizes, oh, crap, this is the play. Is this the play that I saw on film? He looks at the offensive tackle. He looks at the receiver. He looks at the tackle again, and he's like, yeah, no, this is definitely the play. They're showing the signs.
He couldn't even believe it, he said.
Let me just go ahead and act like I don't know really quick. As soon as it was snapped, he took two quick read steps and snatched that thing at the air. I'm like, bro, he knew what it was the whole time. Yep. And the mental thing he aspect. Did was not give it away that he knew. Exactly. And he didn't drop the ball.
Well, just the mentality of, you know, A, recognition of the play from doing your homework and watching film, being on top of it. B, like you said, not letting them know, not giving it away that you know and making it obvious, not letting them check out of it, not getting a little too antsy and letting them know that you're about to jump this route. And then the final mm-hmm. part, a lot of guys have the talent and the football IQ to be able to put themselves in that position. But you see all-stars like, you know, Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa, TJ Watt, all these guys, some of the elite pass rushers in the league, they do that. Max Crosby did it to us, and they try to catch it, but it ends up bouncing off their hands. You know what I mean? It ends up being a great play that was just like a breakup, you know, and a take to steal it down from that offense. Nah, man. Van Ginkle housed it. Like, that was the hard part. You know what I mean? Everything was already hard, but that was the really hard part.
In stride, too.
Yeah, in stride. Didn't stop.
The premium stats on PFF credit him with the sack. They gave him a sack, two hits, three hurries, two batted balls, four solo tackles, and an assisted tackle.
A monster with game.
No targets on him, no completions, no nothing.
And I think Hard Knocks, you know, does gets enough film on a handful of players every week, and then after the game happens, they decide who they're going to highlight the most, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think that once Van Ginkle had that game and his wife watched him have a pick six like that, they're like, yep, it's him.
I mean, and to follow up the episode before, because it's like, oh my God, they just lost like one of their key guys. This is a really, really tough time for them. And then you see the guy just next man up mentality to the fullest extent that could possibly be done almost. Like, that's poetry in motion, big dog. Like, that's easy writing. That's not really picking. They could have talked about a couple of other guys in this game, but just the irony that it's the guy that's filling in for the big loss the week before is just great. Shoot. And then we had another guy have to fill in, and he didn't do too bad either. And I consider these guys our superheroes. AVG is obviously our Thor, but Duke Riley, I would like to don him the nickname of Aquaman, because that Jason Momoa looking mother sucker is so legit. That was so nice to see him come in and just not look like a liability. We don't need him to come in and look like Levante David or anything like that. We just need him to come in and not miss his gaps and not blow his assignments in the pass game. And it didn't seem like he did too much of that, unless, you know, PFF and everybody else got it wrong. But he passed my eye test. What'd you think?
I was a little skeptical of him coming in, obviously, not because I don't like Duke Riley. I mean, we talked about him all last year. Like, we talked about him before he split up with Jess Jules, too, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, all right, RIP all that.
Yeah, she was slandering him, like, early in the season. I didn't like it.
She still is, and I don't like it.
I just stopped paying attention to what she has to say. But
yep,
I thought that he didn't get tried in pass coverage at all in the amount of time that he was on the field. And that was kind of my biggest worry. But he definitely overperformed in the run game, especially outside on some of those short passes. Like, I mean, I guess technically they're passes, but not exactly what I'm talking about. You know, like him being forced into coverage outside or deep, a little deeper, you know, in those messy situations where you realize that a linebacker's on somebody. But the short one, sideline to sideline, I mean, he got there. He was fast. He made the tackle. And I think he was our highest rated player on defense to end the game.
Just a nose above Thor.
Yeah, and that just speaks volumes. I mean, we're talking about how good of a game Andrew Van Ginkle has, and then Duke Riley comes in. I want to talk about the reason he comes in is Brandon Jones, like, just, like, closes his eyes and, you know, turns into an actual torpedo. This is not the first time that he's accidentally made contact with a teammate, which ultimately ends in injury. So I'd like to see that stop. But he looked like he tore Jerome Baker's ACL. The report comes out after where McDaniel says, quote, the vibes. the like he's on the podcast talking to you. The vibes are that it's not season ending.
That's my coach right there, dog. He would fit right in this podcast, and like it wouldn't skip a beat. We'd all be on the same page, and our film breakdowns would be on point pre-show.
Yeah, I think
the vibes.
I think he might know. That's you know, dog. It was a sprain. It turns out it looks like it was like a MCL sprain. So hopefully he can come back. He's had a great year, Jerome. You know, I've been doing my fair share of defending him too. But it's nice to see that Duke Riley can come in and deliver a little bit in a time like that where we need him. Again, grateful it was against a team like the Washington Commanders and not like a one score game versus, you know, Philly or something like that, where he has to come in and, you know, they're running the ball down our throats or something. But we'll see.
Yeah. When was it that Jaylen Waddle got hurt in the Bills game? Wasn't that like opening drive? And then he was like kind of the rest of the way out.
It was like literally the first or second play of the game. He sat out a series, comes back in as like a decoy kind of thing. He did catch a big pass, but he just wasn't the same. He wasn't the same for weeks after that, even.
Exactly. So
that was like a lower back injury or something.
We're getting Duke tuned up before we get through. I mean, this Jets game is going to be important divisionally because we can just kind of seal a lot of things with the division with that. But after that game, we really got to be hitting on all cylinders. So if Jerome's going to miss 3 weeks, 4 weeks, I'm not going to say I'm extra confident, but I think Duke can do enough of a job, and I think we can scheme around it enough with how well David Long continues to play, with how well the rest of the defensive line continues to play. And our overall linebacking core is just really solid, and it seems like they play very well together, and they like playing together.
We got JPP now. Oh, seven figures.
Yeah, you know me. USF's finest. Go Bulls.
I mean, he's just a businessman, so I'm glad he's on the team.
We say we condone JPP's USF allegiance here, but not Mike White. We do not claim Mike White as a USF player.
I mean, I'll take as many as we can get.
Yeah, he's a Western Kentucky guy.
I gotcha. Yeah. Well, before we get too wrapped up in this Jets game or too far ahead for the Jets, let's talk about the Tennessee Titans, who we will be playing on Monday night, primetime, Miami.
Monday Night Football at the Rock.
Yeah, man.
We back at the Rock.
We're going to hear Chris Stapleton come out with a guitar for Monday Night Football, maybe some fireworks. There's
so
actually
two. You
should
go back to back with Darius.
We got, what is it, Green Bay and New York Giants at this kickoff starts at the exact same time as the Miami and Tennessee game. So two Monday night games, weird. But you know,
can't wait to see
December.
The viewership numbers. That's going to be hilarious.
I mean, Green Bay is coming off a real electric win versus the Chiefs. And man, did Jordan Love play a game in that game. But
Tua was the leader in Pro Bowl votes. And people are either going to be watching him because they love him like us, or they're just going to go to hate watch and try to prove their point about whatever their point is.
Brother, I got news for you. Tua was the leader in Pro Bowl votes last year, right?
Yeah, I was there.
He led in Pro Bowl votes. And what happened? The coaches, not the coaches, the literally everyone outside the coaches and the players, like the front office folks or whoever, those types of people, like the committee people, voted to keep him out. They overturned the actual popular vote.
Perfect.
Yeah, so it ain't the first time he's led.
Street's still talking. Street's still watching. Streets is on Tua's side. And let's keep in mind, even though converted Texas A&M quarterback Ryan Tannehill probably won't play, so you're not going to get the Tannehill revenge
definitely
game.
Won't play.
This is the David Long revenge game.
Ooh, love that. I forgot all about that.
Yes, sir. I'm excited because he's probably been my favorite offseason acquisition, including Jalen Ramsey, because Jalen Ramsey's plays have been obviously electric, and him just shutting down a whole side of the field is awesome. But I've been begging for a run-stuffing inside linebacker for as long as you and I have been in a group text together, and we got one.
I mean, he was the highest grade linebacker against the run last year for Tennessee. Talked about that preseason, talked about that offseason, whatever. And he's immediately changed. I mean, we didn't have a bad run defense last year, especially towards the end of the year. Christian Wilkins and them, you know, it was mostly the defensive line. but it wasn't as good as it was this year. You know, for the majority of the year this year, we were like a top five against the run. Now, there's been some blowout wins that contribute to the amount of yards that have been run against us, because it wasn't like during a moment where the game was actually in contention for a loss. But if there's a guy who knows what it's like to have to go up and practice against Derrick Henry
and every day,
and have to prep for a real run game like that, then hey, David Long knows the deal. And I expect to see the Miami defense play a lot of single high, and hopefully Javon is back for that. He's still listed on the injury report with two hurt knees. If not, we got to come. I'm okay with the safety room, especially with Deshaun Elliott playing the way he is.
Lights out.
But we're going to, I imagine we're going to play some single high, dare them to throw the ball. You know, like you said, what you expect Derrick Henry to get, what, 20 touches?
If I'm them, it's probably going to be public knowledge that he's going to get fed early and often. Try to just free up some of the passing game if you can. But at least try to get the defense to respect that, there's somebody heavy coming at you every single play or every other play, essentially. And if they do feed him that much and they're able to find success in it, it burns a bunch of clock. It keeps the ball out of Tua's hands. It's essentially just playing advanced keep away. But
it feels, in
all reality, that's their only way of winning. They do that and they get us to turn the ball over.
Yeah. Which is another good point about this Washington game as well, is that this is the first game in a couple weeks where we didn't turn the ball over.
At all.
You know.
No fumbles.
Nothing.
No sketchy interceptions from Tua crackhead throws. Nothing.
Yeah. So that was nice. And if we can keep that going forward, obviously, again, I want it to happen versus the better teams, but this is a good step forward. And I honestly feel like this Tennessee game is very comparable to the Washington team. You know what I mean? Like, completely. They're going to run the ball versus you. It's a little bit different because they have bona fide all-pro running back, but they're going to run the ball against you, and you're going to have this rookie. He's a rookie, right? Yeah.
Yep.
You're going to have this rookie quarterback be forced to try and convert probably on third downs if you hold them. He also likes to run around. I think under duress and on the move, I still think Sam Howell is better than Will Levis, for sure.
And I think Sam Howell had a more explosive receiving core. Even though I like D-Hop, I had a little bit more fear of Scary Terry and Jahan Dotson getting behind our DBs.
Yeah.
But that just didn't happen. So if that didn't happen with those, 4-3, 4-4 running speedsters, what on earth is Nick Westbrook-Ikhine and the ghost of DeAndre Hopkins going to do?
Yeah, I think the run game is going to dictate what they're able to do. If the run's working and we come out and we're behind them on the run, we're trying to chase stopping them and they're converting third downs, like knowing they're setting up to run. And you know how they do, like they're very old school in the sense of they'll run, and then there's this play action like boot or
bomb, Hail Mary.
Yeah, like a Hail Mary bomb where they just really like throw all the chips into a DeAndre Hopkins bomb, or even, set up in a heavy set and have a tight end leak out. If they're in the red zone, that's coming. You absolutely know that the Tennessee Titans play you and they get you in the red zone, with your backs up against the red zone. They're going to set up in a heavy formation and they're going to have a tight end or some big guy leak out into the flat, and they're going to, it's going to be like a fake. They do it every single game. It's cheesy, but it works when you're built that way. You said before the game started that you thought they reminded you of a high school, like they reminded you of watching a high school game. And I was like, yeah, it looks like they all have the seniors. You know what I mean? They're all massive. They want to move people. That's what they're coming to do. Either you stop that and it's an easy game, or you allow them to do it and it's going to be a little bit closer than you want it to be for comfort.
And even though they're big and tough and they think they're so hard, they give up a lot of deep balls. And honestly, their lack of being able to stop a deep ball is what lost them the game the other day, in a game that they should have won. But they just kept getting bombed on by Alec frickin' Pierce, who, underrated.
Alex or Alec?
Alec, A-L-E-C. He is white.
It's even worse.
But he, dude, but he runs sub 4.5, about 4.4. He is a speedster. But, you know, he'd be fourth or fifth on our depth chart if he even made the team. And this guy uncorked two for over 50 on them, just straight up. So if you guys are having trouble with Alec Pierce and the Gardner Minshew connection, I pray for you this week. As long as Tua isn't doing his crackhead stuff and we're smart with the ball, this is a bloodbath. And we're finally not going to wear the white. We're going to be back at home. It's going to be some beautiful weather. I think we get the home stand. I guess we can call this for this last little bit. It's going to get it rocking. This is a good tune-up game because you get your physical game that you want. We got to stop a big-time running back like you want. We get a rookie quarterback to try to confuse and have a terrible day with. So let's try to run some stats up on these boys.
Yeah, we just stop the run. You know what's coming. They can't. They're not built to do much else. So let's just stop the run.
They do not have a short passing game. They do not have an intermediate in the field passing game. They do not have a deep ball passing game. Both of their quarterbacks, if you want to consider Tannehill as well, they've both taken 19 sacks. So their offensive line isn't that crazy. Their defensive line is led by Jeffrey Simmons, who isn't playing.
Yeah.
So I really don't want to be rude, but like this could be a really long night for Tennessee. But again, this is that weird time of the year where anybody can catch anybody slipping. But I think the juices are flowing in Hard Rock Stadium and in the training facility.
Well, pregame prediction. This is a bad episode for us to talk about our preseason predictions, but you had us losing to Washington 27-20. That obviously didn't happen. That was your trap game.
It was close.
Yeah. And if that wasn't embarrassing enough, I had us losing to the Titans this game. So
that's what's the score?
21-17 Titans.
What did I have for this one?
30-13 Miami.
I like that still. I like this score more than that.
That's not bad, right? Mine's terrible. But
I had my terrible one last week, and then it gets real dicey for us after this one.
Definitely does. I just, like I said, the further the season goes on, the more wrong we have, the more wrong it seems to be. We didn't expect the Titans to be this bad.
Yeah, hey, I mean, but look at that win loss. We're both pretty close.
Oh yeah, I'm falling right into the 12-5. It's gonna. Hey, we're good.
Shit, we win out. I'm good.
Yeah, but I think this game will come down to them trying to win with possession, them trying to take control of the clock, bully us, and I do expect them to do it a little bit, maybe not for the entire game. You know, I expect our defense to be able to give us enough possessions versus them. But if they do that, we're going to need to come out and hit them with the quick strike and exhaust them. You know, you have a 10-minute drive where you end, you know, let's say the Titans have a 10-minute drive, they get a field goal, 10-minute drive, and they have a touchdown. But the Dolphins come out and hit you with a go ball to Tyreek and score in four plays. You know, your offense is tired, and not only are they tired, but that's going to be very disheartening, you know, to put a drive together and just be like, okay, cool, boom, touchdown. Now what? Let's do it again. We're ready, you know, so.
Let's try to drive down there and get into range for Nick Folk.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't seen the Dolphins try to employ the style of game that the Titans play until the game is until we're winning by 10 points since the fourth quarter. You know what I mean? So
agreed.
Hopefully that's the way it goes. You want to say what you said on record about this game?
I'm just not concerned whatsoever, and I don't really care who feels any kind of way about it, but there's just no reason for this to even be a game. And
let me tell you something, right? Anytime that's what I believe, especially in the gambling world, brother, yeah. Anytime that's what you really believe is going to happen, you need to stop yourself and go, well, you know, usually when you're sure about something is when it absolutely goes the opposite way.
I'm not putting the rent money on, you know, the spread or anything like that. I'm just saying this is an opportunity for Tua to put his big Phoenix energy on the table, just kind of show people who the real MVP is. It is not Brock the Cock. The MVP plays in Hard Rock Stadium. It's either Tua or it's Tyreek. And this is where you do it. If he hangs up a quick 400, 3-4 touchdowns, and not all of it are deep balls to Tyreek Hill, he's going to start to push that narrative to the side. But this is your smash spot. The Jets are going to be a little bit tougher. It's also not on primetime. So, I mean, show out, big dog. He likes it when the lights are on. Let's go get something.
Yeah, I just want to see another game with no turnovers, you know, and hopefully you're right, man. I took off work so that I can get drunk for this one.
Hell yeah.
I just don't know how I'm going to be able to explain to my landlord if Raheem doesn't go over in his rushing yards this game. he did me dirty last time. I bet the over on A-Chain. I mean, A-Chan's rushing yards. I bet the over on Raheem's rushing yards. And I bet that Sam Howell would be sacked 3 times. Well, A-Chan delivered. A-Chan delivered easily. Sam Howell was sacked 3 times. And then they took Raheem out and put Jeff Wilson in. And he ended shy 7 yards. So.
Got him.
Yeah, but I think that about does it for this walk in the park game. We will talk back to you next week after this Monday night game. Will be a short week Jets game that we're going into. Fun fact, the Jets were gifted a short week versus each of their divisional opponents. They got to play Patriots on a short week, Bills on a short week, Dolphins on a short week, because the NFL is biased when they make the schedule, and it's such a large New York media market that once it was known that Aaron Rodgers would be the quarterback, they tried to usher them into the playoffs as easily as possible, and it blew up in their face. So, on that note, make sure you follow Sut on Twitter at Chief Sut. Make sure you follow me at YFinsYY. Follow the podcast at Day Number One Dolphins. Stay up to date with the boys. And until next week.
Game for the win. Again.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins number one. Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen.